This week on Barbell Shrug, we talked to Dr. Brad Cole, chiropractor, about injuries, injury prevention, and CrossFit movement.
What's up, guys? It's CTP, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. Make sure you check out our video versions of all these podcasts on our website, fitter.tv. On all of our video versions, we include Technique Wad, which is our series of technique instruction videos for CrossFitters, free previews of some of the seminars we put out, and then sometimes come out of the studio and have special video segments such as cooking in the kitchen with Brandy that one time and out in the pool with Lucas, and who knows what the next thing we'll do is. So make sure you check out our website, fitter.tv, and watch the videos as well.
Hey guys, this is Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and our guest, Dr. Brad Cole, chiropractor. First, I want to talk a little bit about Maximum Mobility. It's a product we have in our store. You can check it out. It's a seminar where Doug basically walks you through a system on trying to figure out which joints that you have are screwed up and how you might want to fix that.
That was a good way to put it.
Yeah. Super simple. All right. I want to talk. So we have Brad Cole here. Mm-hmm. He's a chiropractor. He treats a lot of CrossFit athletes here in Memphis. So we screw him up and he fixes them.
Yeah, something like that.
And yep.
Keeping him in business.
That's right. Well, what's the name of the clinic you work at?
It's Cole Pain Therapy Group.
Okay.
Cole Pain Therapy Group. Yep.
Why would we want to go to a chiropractor versus maybe like a physical therapist or something like that?
That's a great question. Yeah, let me just roll it back just a little bit. So yeah, you talked about me, you know, seeing and treating a lot of CrossFit folks. And basically what I do is look at movement. And there's a lot of PTs look at movement. There's a lot of DCs look at movement. And other trainers look at movement. And that's what you as coaches do. You look at movement and you optimize the movement. I optimize it to get people out of pain. Mm-hmm. And you guys optimize it to get people performing better. And so when a CrossFitter is having some problems that they can't work around with self-care or something that's popped up suddenly, you know, after a heavy lifting session, you know, something swollen, they can't move quite right. That's when I look at it because I can remediate it and back off a little bit. So if you, you know, unfortunately, as a consumer, as athletes out there, when something happens, they take a step back and say, well, where do I need to go to get it fixed? You know, ER, a primary care doc, vet, DC, PT, massage therapy, acupuncture, because all these services are in silos. They're all kind of independent. And you've almost got to pick what treatments you want and then go try that. But when it comes to PT and chiropractic, you know, some people think about chiropractic, it's just, you know, getting joints popped and, you know, and worked on that way and that's it. And if that doesn't help, then you gotta go somewhere else. Now, I think it's kind of an oversimplification. It's like saying a PT, all they do is stretch it and put a hot pack on it. And, you know, all the PTs out there are cringing right now, of course, cause it's a lot more involved than that. And, so it, you know, the distinction between chiropractic and PT in the state of Tennessee and, you know, here when it comes to practice law, there's not a lot. So the hard part for the consumer now is to try to figure out who out there, DC, PT, doesn't matter, whatever, who's good at movement, at fixing movement problems, because that's usually, you know, what causes these, you know, these pain problems.
I got you. So in regard to the difference between PT and chiropractic, how different is the school? Like, I mean, what's the focus for you guys? I mean, because, I mean, everyone does think chiropractic, crack in the back.
Sure.
You know, spine. And then when you think about PT, I feel like, you know, it's like maybe post-surgery or something like that. That's what I think of.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. If you've got a surgical something replaced, whatever, don't come see me. I do not, I do not want it. I'm not good at it. And I don't live there at all. And I mean, the PT, as far as schooling, it's so broad and there's so many subspecialties. My wife's a pediatric physical therapist. She doesn't want to see anybody who's, you know, has an orthopedic problem. That's what I love. You know, she works with neurological cases, CP and, you know, things like that.
Okay.
She's great at it. She's a PT. And so she, there's a lot of stuff that other PTs do in the ortho world that she doesn't do. And so there's a lot of variability in PT, you know, there's, and so mostly when you think about PT, people think about outpatient, orthopedic, post-surgical, all that stuff's great. And there's a lot of really, really good people out there in every field. And so the PT education is pretty broad. And, you know, with that being said, after school, as you specialize in things, you know, that's where the, you know, that's where you really find somebody who's good. You want somebody who's up on the literature. And so when it comes to the athletic world, you know, look for a PT or DC who's up in the literature. You asked about schooling. When it comes to chiropractic school, yeah, I mean, manipulation, you know, pushing on joints and making them click and pop, that's what DCs are known for. We put a lot of training into that, the joint manipulation. Mm-hmm. And there's just more training in the current curriculum for chiropractors when it comes to joint manipulation. Mm-hmm. The physical therapy world in school has gone under a lot of evolution over the past couple of years. Now the DCs, the PTs coming out, they're all a DPT, Doctor of Physical Therapy. There's a mm-hmm. lot more a diagnosis going on and analysis, which is an excellent thing because the primary care doc's writing the script for somebody with a shoulder issue. They tell the PT what to do to how to treat it. Is this terrible? Because the primary care guys don't know, and the PTs know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for that, you know, open access for the PTs and for them to be able to analyze and treat and get patients excellent care. Mm-hmm. And so similar on the DC world, the education's broad. You know, there's some that specialize in nutrition, some more in pediatrics, some more in neurological cases. Like at Cold Pain Therapy Group, my father practices with me. He specializes in neurological problems, chronic pain, mm-hmm. those types of problems. And I've got a master's in sports rehab. So after DC school, master's sports rehab, and also a CSCS, the strength conditioning, which most of the athletic training world lives and breathes that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's my, you know, specialization. And so it kind of positions me better to treat that subpopulation of athletes and people with movement disorders, mm-hmm. Those functional movement disorders, not necessarily the pathological ones.
Mm-hmm. So, what got you into chiropractic?
Oh, yeah,
versus
that's a great
anything
question.
Else? Or
yeah,
PT.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, looking back into it, I liked what the PTs are doing as far as that. When it comes to access to care, chiropractic puts me at a physician status, and so I have open access. People can come to me directly, direct access. I can order MRIs and all those. I can order those the diagnostics, and so I can do more.
Okay. Can you get an X-ray for my neck?
I can X-ray your neck too.
All right, we're gonna talk this week.
Is that gonna be your new new profile pic?
That's right. X-ray of my neck going totally sideways.
Excellent. You jacked it up recently.
Yeah, I've actually had not to like turn this whole podcast on to me, but like I've had a lot of neck pain the last couple months.
Oh, we can diagnose it right now. Okay. Tell me more.
I've had trouble turning to the right, especially like sharp pains about right there. All the pain is on the left side. I'd say C4.
Sure, sure. So and maybe. So yeah, so ish. I mean, what you've described so far is a mechanical pain problem. Mm-hmm. It hurts worse when you rotate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that tells us a lot about what's going on.
The other day, my girlfriend's a DPT at Campbell Clinic.
Awesome.
And really, I don't ask her to work on me that much at all. I probably should more often with the amount of pain that I'm getting. But she was palpating my spinous processes, and it feels like one of those is like dramatically shifted to the left, like a little bit out of place. And then I got some X-rays from a different chiro a couple of years ago, and you can very, very easily see that it's quite crooked.
Sure.
But anyway, we can talk about me another day, but I just wanted to see if you could do that while you were talking about it.
Yeah, ball-ping hammer.
That's right.
Just knock it back in place.
You know what? If nothing else works, we'll bring out the mini trampoline and the 2-pound hammer and make things happen.
I don't know what that means, but I am down.
No concern. That's a joke. Yeah.
There you go. A minute ago, you were talking about doing the joint mobs or what did you call it?
Manipulation. Manipulation. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Mike was saying, you know, most people expect that when they go to the chiropractor. They expect to get cracked and popped and whatnot. Can you dig into that a little bit and talk about why you're doing that and what is happening and when that happens and how that helps people?
It's a great question. Joints get stuck like muscles get stiff. All right. Mm-hmm. You get a muscle, it's tight. There's also joints that get stuck. Most people are familiar with muscles being tight. Mm-hmm. So let's just kind of flesh out that analogy there. You get a tight muscle, it needs to be stretched. As you go through a course of stretching, it improves the motion there. similar with a joint, because you talked about a joint in your neck being stuck and rotated out of place. A better description of most joint problems is just a motion restriction problem, as opposed to the bone being stuck out in left field. If that's a if that's the case, you might need to see like an orthopedic surgeon instead to get that thing fused. You know, but instead, as opposed to the joint being dislocated, it's more stuck in its motion. And so just like muscles get tight, joints get stuck. And so what I do when I'm treating someone's joint restriction problem, joint joint imbalance, is assess the joint motion. So you talk about the C4, C5 in the neck area. So assess the motion of each joint and apply a controlled thrust manipulation to move that joint through its range in a quick and comfortable way. And it improves the range of motion, immediately suppresses some pain because of there's an endorphin kick. Most people are kind of familiar with that. You know, they pop their own neck or back, say, oh, it feels good. And what they're doing is they're popping loose joints. So it feels good for a couple, you know, 20 minutes. And then they don't really resolve any motion imbalance. So when I do a motion assessment, I'm checking for the joints that are most stuck, applying a corrective force or thrust to those joints, improving the motion. As we go through a course of manipulation, 5, 6, 20 times, whatever it is for that type of a problem, it improves that motion and balances the motion out across the spine.
Okay.
So usually if there's a joint that's stuck, there's an adjacent joint that moves too much and becomes sore and painful too.
So if someone's popping their own back, kind of what I got from what you said is that the looser joints are going to take that path of least resistance more easily than the tight joints, and they're going to make their problem worse. Is that potentially the way that works?
Certainly not helping themselves. You know, most people will have a stiff neck and they pop their back daily for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. If I did that, it'd be called malpractice, you know. So if a self-care doesn't work early, and if a self-care doesn't work in a dependable way, then it might not be appropriate self-care.
Okay.
I remember before we brought you on a couple of days ago, Doug and I were talking.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how, you know, if you're laying there and a chiropractor is trying to manipulate a joint and and you don't hear a big pop, you know, you might feel like, oh, well, it didn't work.
The placebo effect.
Well, I remember thinking that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, you were talking about it, so I'll let you say it.
Yeah, I mean, people expect to get cracked and popped, and given that most people have absolutely no idea what you're really doing, they just expect to get cracked and popped. Like, if you go to do a manipulation on somebody and you don't get a series of cracks and it just doesn't work at all, like, I remember being, you know, in my late teens and having that happen and me being like, this guy's full of shit. He doesn't know what he's doing at all. I didn't crack a bit.
It didn't crack at all.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And what does that mean? If you try manipulation and it doesn't work, does that what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, what I explain to most people that I'm working with is that the click of a joint is ancillary to treatment. It's not the desired effect that we're looking for, but it's actually ancillary to the joint motion. I mean, if a lumbar facet is really swollen, and I'm going to mobilize that facet, it's not going to click. It's going to feel kind of boggy and squishy, and it's not going to be clicking and popping. You know, if somebody has a very arthritic neck, it's not going to move around too much, but they can get excellent benefit from mobilizing that, retraining the posture, going through some corrective exercises, changing their nutrition, and all of that, you know, in that comprehensive type of a way, the comprehensive plan. That's the best way to do it. And so if a joint doesn't click, I mean, you know, it may not be, you know, significant at all.
So that's not the goal. It's just a side effect.
Precisely. But it's a fun side effect, too.
Yeah.
It always feels good when it happens to me.
It certainly helps people feel like it's working.
For sure.
Actually, kind of on that note, I read a cool article the other day about toothpaste. And they put the minty flavor in there, and they put in that sodium lauryl sulfate or whatever that makes it bubble also, because when stuff gets clean, they expect bubbles. And none of that stuff does anything, but people just expect it, and makes people feel like it's working, and it just helps sales immensely.
Yeah,
so kind of like that.
I don't want to use a toothpaste that doesn't bubble.
Yeah.
It's all about managing expectations. And sometimes those expectations aren't quite accurate, so that's where the education part comes in. And so, I mean, you guys are coaches. You know, it's all about managing expectations. And, you know, putting people on the right track.
I know my wife is seeing you right now for some of her problems.
Yeah.
You probably can't talk about that due to some kind of HIPAA rules or something like that.
That's right. We'll call her Jane. Go ahead.
It's my wife, Jane. No, she was just talking about how she really appreciated how, like both of us have seen chiropractors before. She really appreciated how you explained things. She felt like she was learning while she was there with you. I think you were just talking about education, and a lot of times, if someone doesn't understand why, then you know, it just seems kind of hokey.
Oh, exactly right. And I mean, what I do as a part of the healthcare community here in town is what everyone else does. We just catch each other's failures. All right. And so, I mean,
honesty. I like it here on the Barbell Shrug podcast.
And I mean, I found out a long time ago that most people hacked off coming to me. They went to somebody and they were given some recommendation. They were confused about it. And the guy said, well, if it doesn't work, you know, come back in 2 weeks. And I said, well, did you go back? She's like, no, I came here. And so, you know, so A, patients don't really do what they're told, especially if they don't understand why. And so, I mean, that's what I really focus on. I mean, that's the majority of what I do is to educate people. And because if they don't understand why I'm doing something and they don't buy into it and they're not active with the nutritional recommendations and the self-care and the corrective exercises, then it's not really going to work. I put a lot of trust into them being active with it. Because it's not a passive treatment plan. You know, people can't show up and just get worked on and all of a sudden magically improve. Sometimes that happens, but oftentimes I'm asking them to do a lot of stuff too.
One thing I've learned over the years is that when I give someone a piece of advice, I always say it to them with the expectation that they're doing this dozen other things correctly already, and I don't have to say that stuff, but they don't know that stuff. Even though I used to expect them to know it, they don't know it. And so the fact that you tend to, I wouldn't say you over-communicate, but you tend to communicate everything very clearly, just hearing it from Ashley, or Jane, Jane, Mike's wife.
Now Ashley's going to think I have another wife named Jane.
That's right.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing, because people walk out of there, you know, or lock out of other settings and have no idea why they were told what they were told.
Exactly. You got to say it three times. You got to write it down, hand it to them. And then when they come back the next day, you tell them three more times. I mean, because most people leave with a feeling. I mean, you know, if I'm going to assess somebody for 45 minutes, talking to them throughout the assessment, educating them, you know, we start some kind of a treatment and they leave and they have absolutely, I mean, they can't recall everything. And so there's significant others as well. And what he say is, you know, a lot of stuff. I don't know.
That's why I'm not allowed to go anymore.
<It's 'cause laughs> too many questions, huh?
No, I'll actually talk to you and then you can't talk to her.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is a downside.
I'll talk about stuff that doesn't have anything to do with her.
Yeah, I wound up shooting the breeze for a while, and she's sitting there saying, "Hey, wait a second, I'm here for a reason, guys."
Yeah. That's right. What are some of the most common injuries you see with CrossFitters specifically? Because how many do you treat in Memphis?
We were talking about that. We're just kind of chatting about that before we started here, and I kind of glanced through the records before I came over here, and there's got to be at least 60 CrossFitters or people who've trained at CrossFit gyms.
Mostly from other CrossFit gyms, not facts. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, from
we're
all
not screwing
over,
anybody
from
up.
All over.
I heard all the faction athletes got hurt outside of CrossFit, fixing their cars and playing with their kids, but not at our gym.
Failing to lift with their knees or something like that. Yeah, something like that. But yeah, and so CrossFit athletes, like any other athlete, you know, the pros, they get treated daily, you know, for some reason or another. And so, I mean, you know, nobody's getting hurt from doing dumb stuff in the CrossFit gym. They're training hard.
Yeah.
And so, they need tune-ups, and they need very different types of tune-ups than the usual, self-directed training hard athlete, which is pretty interesting, because most folks, I mean, even if they've been at CrossFit for a week or two, they come in with a higher level of understanding about movement and movement quality and how that's imperative to, you know, move in a healthy and efficient way. If you're going to pick up something heavy, it needs to be efficient. If you're going to pick up a hamper, you know, full of clothes, it needs to be efficient. If you're going to pick up a pencil, it needs to be efficient. Mm-hmm. And that efficiency is similar across the board. And so they already come in knowing the importance of the movement efficiency. And so, I mean, it just makes my job so much easier, because we can just hone in on the small dysfunction that's causing the problem, and then they can get on. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, somebody who's doesn't have that level of understanding, they haven't been, you know, properly coached, there's just so much I've got to fix. Mm-hmm. You know, so much I've got to fix. And that's fine too. And I love helping athletes at all levels, but
I know with respect to movement efficiency, me and you have a similar philosophy as far as the different needs of the different joints. And I've talked about this on the podcast many times as far as which joints need to be trained for more stability and which joints need to more than likely be trained for more mobility. And I've explained it a couple of times, but you probably explain it a little bit differently than I do. So can you kind of dig into that concept and mm-hmm. explain kind of what good technique is and how people are supposed to move and what movement efficiency really is on a joint by joint basis?
Yeah, as far as the joint by joint, I just could bullet down pretty quickly. And I say, look, your ankles are tight, your knee is loose and injured, your hips are tight, your low back is loose and injured, your T-spine is tight, your shoulders are loose and injured, mm-hmm. Your lower neck is loose and injured because your upper neck is tight. Mm-hmm. And then they say, oh, okay, why is that? I say, well, because we all develop from an infant to adulthood in the same way. And that's just how we're, that's just how we develop. And, because you're human, that's just the way it is. And I say, oh, okay. And then it kind of makes sense from that point out. You don't really have to go into postural ontogenesis and all, neurodevelopmental theory. Mm-hmm. You say, oh, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And then you can boil it down to a muscle tightness too. Mm-hmm. An infant comes out and their shoulders are elevated, their biceps are up, their hips are flexed, their toes are up, and they have the muscles are tonic. The same muscles that are tonic in an infant are the ones that are tight as adults. And it takes 4 years of development for an infant to be able to do certain maneuvers, basically looks like a thruster and an overhead squat. All right. It takes 4 years of neurodevelopment to achieve that as a human. Mm-hmm. And then throughout adolescence and adulthood, we fall out of that pattern. And so when it comes to rehab, it's really simple. All I really do for most athletes, if they're normally developed neurologically, is to try to groove them back to an overhead squat. Mm-hmm. And, whatever that would look like for that certain athlete, mm-hmm. just try to get them back to that overhead squat pattern. Mm-hmm. And, there's certain differences based on different injuries, but that's really what I boil it down to. You mm-hmm. got to work on and achieve and maintain an overhead squat. Mm-hmm. And that fixes all the problems.
Okay. I might have derailed Mike's last question about the most common injuries for the CrossFit athletes here in town. Can you dig back into that question and talk about the stuff that you see from CrossFit athletes specifically?
Yep. One of the most common things that I see would be lower neck problems. Sorry, Doug. Lower neck problems with losing cervicothoracic stability when you're overhead with weight. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when an athlete's overhead with weight, what'll happen if they lose that stability is they shoot their neck forward. All right. Their head comes forward. Even some coaches talk about, head through the window. All right. Mm-hmm. What that does is it throws in lower cervical flexion. All right. Mm-hmm. And upper cervical extension. All right. Head through the window, and that destabilizes that whole cervical thoracic junction. Mm-hmm. Whereas what we have to, what I teach and you guys need to coach, mm-hmm. you guys do a great job, is the neck packed position. Mm-hmm. All right. So this teach people how to pack the neck. If you can't pack the neck if the patient can't do that on their own, there's some other limiting factor. And that's when they're my clinic, they usually need some type of a manual mm-hmm. intervention, some kind of manual support mm-hmm. to achieve that neck packed position, to teach it so they're mm-hmm. aware of it, and then give them the tools to groove it and reinforce it.
So I was going to say, can I break that down for people who have no idea what you're talking about?
Oh yeah. Sorry.
So the original Jeez. Thing that you mentioned was,
what's he talking about?
If you can look at me from the side, CTP mm-hmm. is when people push their head through the window, they're putting themselves into computer posture like this. They're pushing their chin forward,
yep.
and they're rounding their lower neck forward like that into flexion.
Uh-huh.
And then their upper neck is kind of hyperextended just the top few segments.
Exactly right. Yep.
And then
the top segment.
And then packing the neck is the opposite. Yep. That cervical retraction where you're pulling your chin back. Yes. And you're making those two curves kind of go opposite of what they were when you're sticking your chin forward.
Exactly.
Right. And so your mid to lower cervical is now going from kind of loose and flexed to a little more stable.
You've got it.
And then your upper cervical is going from hyperextended and tight mm-hmm. to less extended. I wouldn't say flex necessarily, but is it flex?
Yeah, there's flex. Yeah,
flex.
Upper cervical flexion, because they're actually trying to work on the deep cervical flexors. You can't see them; they're behind your esophagus, mm-hmm. and those are the ones that are active. You can kind of help to facilitate that activity by pressing your tongue with the roof of your mouth. Mm-hmm. Everyone, go ahead and do that right now.
I'm doing it right now.
Excellent.
Yeah, right.
I can't do it while I talk, but so pressing tongue to the roof of the mouth.
You can't
helps
see
to
it,
activate.
But I'm doing it.
You can't see these muscles,
all right?
But they're behind the esophagus and. Achieving that type of neck pack with the tongue pressed to the roof of the mouth mm-hmm. It positions the neck in a much more stable way. Because mm-hmm. when you're overhead, the upper back needs extension, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to extend the upper back.
Right.
If you're trying to extend the upper back, but you're also shooting your head forward, then you're trying to extend and also flex your upper back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work, and it causes the joints to overload and jam, and it hurts later on.
So what I got out of this is people need to push their tongue to the roof of their mouth when they go overhead.
And neck pack. And neck pack.
And neck pack. I forgot about that.
The easy way I've heard the easy way that I've heard packing the neck explained is that you're trying to make a double chin.
Exactly.
Like this.
Yep.
I don't really have a double chin, I don't think, but
no, the ladies are always very concerned about the neck pack position.
Right.
So
on that note too is when I'm coaching, I rarely tell people to push their head through. I tell them to pull their hands back.
Oh, awesome.
Instead.
Yeah, awesome.
For that exact reason.
That's a great coaching cue. But this is what's really unfortunate, and is if you go to a CrossFit competition, the judges, a lot of times, what they're looking for is ears in front of the arms. Mm-hmm. If you don't get ears in front of the arms, it doesn't work. So if you're in the gym training, that's okay. But I've seen, you know, perfect overhead position by an athlete, and they're getting no rep at a competition. And I don't know if you've ever been to a CrossFit
competition. I'd love to. Is this an invitation?
Yeah, you should come to...
We'll do it.
I don't know. We'll go to one sometime.
Very good. It's on the calendar.
But a lot of times there'll be a judge who's not. The judges aren't always extremely experienced. A lot of them aren't coaches. A lot mm-hmm. of them are just another athlete or someone who just likes CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes judges get thrown in these not super high level competitions, and they've been CrossFitting for 2 or 3 months. That's like their level of experience.
Yeah. A lot of times they're just like, we need judges. And they just like, anyone want a judge? And they just like ask the audience. And people are like, I guess I'll do it.
Yes, that still happens.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So the standard ends up being ears in front of the arms.
Yeah.
And so I remember specifically this happened to Caitlin. I don't know if you know Caitlin Mills.
Yeah.
This happened to her a year and a half ago at regionals. She was getting no rep. And I'm over there screaming, you have to stick your head through, like over-exaggerate. Mm-hmm. Not safe, but absolutely necessary if she wanted to do well at the competition.
Yeah, ugly. And the dirty little secret here too is that when it comes to spine stability and performance, I mean, somebody could do something poorly mm-hmm. and pick up heavier weight. Because that's what they're more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And after they fix the movement, they could, you know, pick up more weight after they fix it. But if they're mm-hmm. comfortable in the dysfunction, they can, you know, pick up more weight that way. So, you know, there's obviously a difference there between training and competition. And then when it comes to the standards too, if we could fix that. Can we fix that?
I've tried to fix a lot of things and it seems that it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
CrossFit is pretty discombobulated as a whole, as an organization.
Yeah, large and organic, huh?
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's like, you may be able to fix this over here, but you can't fix this over here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some people maybe at headquarters have an idea about what things should be, and, you know, that's just the way it's going to be.
Sure, sure.
So, no matter what.
All right, so what other injuries do you see?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to the step down test, I mean, because Doug, you've got a lot of great information on your mobility, the posters and the seminars that you've got, and so I'm sure you looked at it. But you know, looking mm-hmm. at ankle dorsiflexion mm-hmm. movement and how it affects the knee, how it affects the hip, how it affects the whole overhead squat patterning.
Mm-hmm.
Ankle sure. dorsiflexion is huge.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure.
About lack of ankle range of motion and how that makes you compensate as a result?
Exactly right. It's a lack of ankle range of motion. Most people think, oh, my ankles are too loose. They're too loose because I keep spraining them to the side. Well, there's a side motion that needs to be checked, of course, but it's that front-on motion, that the tightness that people feel when they're doing a deep squat at the ankle,
mm-hmm.
the inability to keep their ankle or their foot flat to the floor during a deep squat,
mm-hmm.
or easy test, get a step, a regular standard step, most building codes is 7 inches,
mm-hmm.
and so one should be barefoot, standing on a step, and be able to step forward, tap their heel mm-hmm. with comfort on the step below
mm-hmm.
and not raise up the heel. In fact, also mm-hmm. have the foot going straight forward. So the angle or the bones of the second toe mm-hmm. are pointing straight forward
mm-hmm.
and you step down. It's, everyone should have that ankle range of motion of a standard step down test.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people come in with some certain movement movement dysfunction that resulted in pain at the knee, the hip, the shoulder, whatever, low back. Maybe they think that their shoulders are too tight because they just can't get that weight overhead. But it all comes down to sometimes all the way down the ground to the ankle range of motion. And mm-hmm. so achieving the dorsiflexion is huge.
Mm-hmm. What about shoulders? I see a lot of shoulder injuries, or at least a lot of. It's injuries that athletes say like, oh, well, it's not injured. It's just achy. Like it just, uh-huh. I mean, it's not hurt. It just doesn't feel normal. Yeah. Well, that's injured. I see a lot of shoulder injuries in the CrossFit world.
Yeah.
At our gym, but at most CrossFit gyms, we do a lot of overhead, everything, lots of jerks, lots of snatches, lots of pull-ups, lots of vertical pushing and pulling. And that beats up a lot of people, especially when they are just starting CrossFit and they go from not doing any of it to just jumping right into it.
Yeah. I joke with folks pretty regularly about their shoulder issues. In regards to, I say, hey, if you weren't doing CrossFit, and you'd never reach overhead until you're, pulling your luggage out of the bin on the airplane, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody ever reaches overhead, especially with the weight in their hand, unless you're at CrossFit, yeah. and it's a movement that most people have lost and haven't done or have never done, and so yeah, it's one of those movements that requires some good scapular stability. Shoulder blade has to be stable,
mm-hmm.
but also very dynamic. It's going to move through a pretty big range, but still have stability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated. It's hard to assess on your own. It's mm-hmm. hard to check for it. And if it's not working right, it's going to cause some shoulder problems.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote an article, kind of recently.
Yeah.
It was about maybe a month or two ago.
That's about how far my blog's usually out.
you had a rebuttal to K-Star's icing.
Yeah.
He did a video on ice.
Yeah.
And then, so do you watch K-Star all the time?
No. Somebody just asked me out of the blue. He's like, hey, what do you think about this video? I was like, that looks pretty cool. He's done a lot of really awesome stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we love K-Star and we watch it all the time.
Yeah, really cool stuff.
Follow him quite closely. And then I actually didn't see the ice thing. I saw yours.
Yeah.
I saw your rebuttal. Before I saw his video.
An inspired clarification. Yeah.
So what?
It was more of an inspired clarification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I then went and watched the video.
Sure.
But can you tell us a little bit about that article? That's the latest article that's on your blog right now.
Yeah, sure. I think the real point of the article was not to overgeneralize any one treatment. And especially in the manual therapy world, the chiropractic, PT, athletic sports injury world, everybody's real treatment focused, and it's easy to do. I love certain treatments. I get excited about certain treatments, and it's kind of a disservice to anybody who's paying close attention to say that one treatment's going to be far superior over another one.
What did K-Star say?
In general. Yeah, so K-Star said, to summarize, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we don't need to ice down anymore after we work out, but instead use compression because compression's superior. Because ice, what ice actually does is it causes vasoconstriction. It pushes the blood out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
But if something is inflamed, it needs more blood. It needs more inflammation to heal up.
Mm.
And so that's a very valid point,
mm-hmm.
theoretically. But it doesn't apply across the board to athletes or to people in pain.
So, I mean, if you've had an injury, ice is the obvious way to go.
Precisely. If I get a bee sting, I'd rather put ice on it than heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And most would. But on the flip side, like K-Star was, what was, also suggested that, don't ice yourself down after every single training session just because it hurts. And I think that, as coaches, you would certainly agree if somebody's in pain after every single training session, they're either overtraining or they're training poorly. Mm-hmm. And you know, this tearing stuff up.
Yeah, pain is a symptom of something going wrong. And if you think you're fixing it with ice,
exactly,
it's a
right.
big mistake.
Precisely. Yeah, pain is never there without inflammation. Inflammation is the only thing that causes pain in the body. And ice can help reduce inflammation if applied appropriately. And but it also inflammation is also there to heal the tissues. Mm-hmm. And so it's all a matter of what people need. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's what makes this stuff so fun and difficult, and so different on a case by case basis. Mm-hmm. But in general, the tools are not as you can't really generalize and say one tool is going to be great. You know, it's new and it's great for everything. But instead, you've got to really structure, you know, your training programming, your nutrition, your self care, and then have a good diagnosis for a pain problem, mm-hmm. and then figure out what tools would be best for that specific diagnosis for that specific case.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Let's go ahead and take a break real quick. Yeah. And y'all watch the Technique Wad video and we'll be back.
Hey, thanks. Cool.
Welcome back to Barbell Shrug. We're still here with Dr. Brad Cole, even though we don't like him. No, we like him.
I haven't left yet.
And Doug Larson's still here too.
That's right. I didn't go anywhere.
Amazingly. No. We were kind of talking about some of the misconceptions during the break.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
We want to dig into those a little bit.
Take the gloves off, guys.
And I'll say the first one that came up was if I go to a – what was it? What was I thinking? No, go ahead, Doug. I think I lost track.
Your question or the thing that you've heard from many people about going to a chiropractor is that they expect to go one time, and then when it's not fixed in a single session, they're upset about it. As if he does have magic hands, but as if he had magic hands and could just magically heal you with his powers. Like, you have to let something heal over time, and one session is never going to cover it, right?
So you have magic hands?
No comments. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to just simply managing expectations. And so mm-hmm. If they're going to go to the doctor, to the chiropractor one time, and then have it all fixed up. It doesn't quite work that way, because what I have offers information, education, but also usually, unless I send them somewhere else, a manual treatment or some type of treatment that we do there. And it takes a course of treatment to have a good treatment effect. Mm-hmm. Just like if you go get a course of antibiotics, you take the antibiotics 2 a day until they run out. You're going through a course of treatment mm-hmm. With a chiropractor or a physical therapist. You're going to go through a course of treatment to have that good training or that good a treatment effect. And similarly, people also have concerns about if I go once, I'll have to go for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. There's kind of two sides to that. One is, yes, you have to go through a course of treatment to have an excellent effect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's 2, sometimes it's 30. It really depends on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. But I think what a lot of people find when they come see us is that we can help them out with more than they had expected originally. Mm-hmm. So when somebody comes in with a low back issue or a hip issue, mm-hmm. and we also talk about their chronic daily headaches, and if they start to develop an Advil deficiency, and then they can pop some more Advil and address that chronic daily headache. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we can help out with those issues too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people find that we can help them out with more than what they had originally mm-hmm. anticipated.
And so for someone that's never studied anything in your field, how would being a movement coach mm-hmm. influence getting headaches?
Sure. How would coaching towards it? Or
I mean, how would coaching someone on movement efficiency mm-hmm. and dealing with their joints and popping their spine and stuff mm-hmm. influence chronic pain that I have like in my head?
Oh gosh. Okay. I mean, yeah. Well,
how is that even in the same category?
A great question. As far as what causes a headache, the majority of headaches aren't caused by something inside your head. Mm-hmm. The brain tissue doesn't really have a lot of pain receptors to it, actually, mm-hmm. but the blood vessels do. The skin around the head does. The muscles all around the head and the neck, they do. And so the majority of head pain is actually from the muscle and joint system around the jaw and the neck. And that's around the head that causes the head pain. And so, you know, if there's a movement problem in the shoulder, it causes shoulder pain. There's movement problems around the neck and the jaw that cause the majority of headache pains.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have a headache, you could have, it could be due to a shoulder issue.
It could be a shoulder problem. It could be a tumor. It needs to be it needs to be accurately diagnosed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with things like forward head posture, like we were talking about earlier, about kind of jutting your chin forward like be one of the things that might influence something like that?
All day long. And so, I mean, people come with a shoulder problem, and when we assess them and work them up and put a little bit of pressure on those sensitive muscles right there at the base of your skull on the backside, and all of a sudden they say, oh, that's my headache, and they start wincing and closing that one eye. I say, well, has it hurt your eye? Yeah, it hurts my eye. It's because the muscle's causing pain up to the head. And so it's wonderfully diagnostic. You don't see that on MRI, but when you put your thumb on, you know, pressurize those suboccipital muscles behind right there at the base of the skull and reproduce the headache, it's a beautiful thing because we can actually address that and fix that. So,
is that something you deal with on a regular basis, MRIs?
Yeah, we can, you know, the MRI is helpful for answering clinical questions. And so a lot of people come in and say, I think I need an MRI. And, you know, I don't usually say it in a crass way, but what I think is, well, why would you need an MRI? You know, if someone needs an MRI,
Doctor so and so,
yeah, I would need an MRI to help diagnose somebody. You don't, I mean, what would you need an MRI for? It's just a picture of your neck. And so, yeah, I mean, MRIs, they're, you know, people talk about how they're overused. They're just more misused than anything else.
Yeah.
Because they're there to answer a clinical question. And it's usually, you know, whoever's trying to diagnose the problem who has the clinical questions.
Mm-hmm. I know in the fitness world, you go to seminars and whatnot, and inevitably I see a presentation at least once every couple of months where they show three pictures of MRIs, and they say this person on the MRI very obviously has something wrong and they're asymptomatic, and this other person very clearly has nothing that we can find and they're in chronic pain, and then they kind of throw their hands up and they say, you know, MRIs, you know, they're useful, but they're not really that useful, and that's why you should buy my program.
there's some truth to that, sure. You know, if you look at that the confusion between, you know, symptomatic and problematic and asymptomatic and normal degenerative wear and tear, torn meniscus, arthritis, bulging disc on MRI, normal, non-painful. If you look at all that and then shrug your shoulders and just kind of walk away, I think that's kind of selling the whole diagnosis, the MRI short. But instead, it needs to fit into the overall analysis of what's going on. If someone has evidence of another process going on, and then it's best diagnosed with MRI, then MRI is a good thing to have to rule out problems or rule in problems. But you use it in the context of figuring out what's going on, but with caution too.
I want to get back to headaches real quick.
Yeah, sure.
How frequent? So mostly women, I hear. I get headaches all the time. And say women.
All the women that you know tell
all
you
the
that.
Women I know. Exactly. That's why I get headaches. It's crazy.
A couple hours with you. Oh my gosh.
My girlfriends don't get headaches. It's weird.
My wife nor my girlfriends. No. So how often is the headache something that you can help fix, or how often is it a chiropractic issue versus, say, you know, someone needs to take some medication or maybe a nutritional issue?
Yeah. Great question. Like if you're going to talk about, you know, how often the headache is coming from a neck or a jaw
or movement,
dysfunction. Yeah. It's the research says 9 out of 10 headaches. And so most headaches. All right. And so, I mean, then you're left with migraines, and you can have a neck jaw dysfunction that causes a terrible headache, and so migraine just doesn't mean a worse headache than usual. It's just a whole different type of a diagnosis or headache. So the genesis of the headache is completely different. And without getting into that, so how often is it nutritional versus movement versus hormonal versus emotional versus environmental, perfumes and allergies? Answer is yes, all of the above, and often multiple causes of headache. And so we kind of describe it as a glass, and this take a glass here, prop. Take a glass, and we start filling up the glass and pretend that it's not going to be painful until it's overflowing. And so if we pour in some movement dysfunction, pour in some nutrition, pour in some emotion, and then all of a sudden hormonal issues and it's overflowing, that's the pain.
That would explain the woman thing.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say that. But there's all these things that stack up to cause the triggering of the headache. And so if you address the movement issue, then you can have more room for error. If you address the movement and the nutritional issue, then you're really getting the headaches under control. And then you have to address the movement and the nutrition or the hormonal issues there too. Then you've got even a better handle on the headaches. And so it's all about managing the triggers and the things that stack up. So yeah, headaches are really difficult to work with in that it's rarely one single thing that causes the headache. But most headaches do have a cervical or a neck, jaw, muscle, joint component.
That's one of the triggers.
Yeah.
I saw that you have a little bit of a nutritional component on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you guys do at your practice, or is that just some advice you thought on the website? And how much do you integrate that into your practice?
I mean, the extent that I know about nutrition just has to do with nutrition inflammation. That applies across the board to everybody. So I can't get into, because I have no idea about condition-specific nutrition. Leave that to the nutritionists.
Right.
That's a full-time thing. Don't go to somebody who does that on the side. But when it comes to everybody out there, if you eat and if you have inflammation, which is all of us, then there are certain nutritional recommendations, which is basically the paleo diet. The only caveat I throw into the paleo diet, because sometimes people forget that the meat source can be fatty, and the fatty nature of it is often inflammatory, because our modern day meat sources are feasting on corn chips. So
yeah,
keep that in mind and put the bacon and the sausage down unless it's a wild.
That's why it's good to kill your meat or get it grass fed.
You've got it right
from the farm.
Yep. Exactly. And if it's not grass fed, then back off on the bacon and the sausage, guys.
Yeah. Actually, I want to take one more twist or turn here at the very end. Just popped in my head. I want to get your thoughts on sleeping positions and how that might influence something like chronic neck pain or chronic back pain.
Sure.
Do you advise people on that? On how to sleep?
I kind of boil it down to sleep comfortably and then don't do anything stupid. And so, I don't explain it that way. That's kind of what's going through my head. So I usually ask them, well, how do you sleep? And some people will say really weird things after that point. And I say, well, you've got to stop that. But I mean, outside of that, people will just try to sleep comfortably. They just try to get to a comfortable position.
I feel like we just missed out on a good story.
Oh yeah. Like I don't sleep with a pillow. Some people will say, I don't sleep with a pillow. I was like, well, why not? Cause I can't sleep otherwise. Well, that's, there could be some other issues at hand.
Are pillows
there
beneficial, or is that just something we like because it's comfortable? Or is it because it's comfortable? It's comfortable because it's good for us. Which one is it?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Chicken and egg. Chicken and egg. Cart and horse.
Okay. I'm getting a philosophy on here.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, I don't sleep with a pillow. Go ahead and dig into that.
You don't sleep with a pillow?
Mm-mm. Okay. I mostly sleep flat on my back with no pillow.
He's a weirdo.
Well, yeah. And that doesn't put your neck into more extension than you'd usually have if you're awake?
Says the guy that has neck pain.
Well, no, actually, I stopped using a pillow because it hurts my neck.
The pillow hurts?
Yeah.
And so,
I don't know, maybe it was the wrong size of pillow or something. But if I'm on my side, I'll put a pillow under my head.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that helps keep me in alignment.
Precisely. But otherwise, your head's like by your shoulder. That's not good to have throughout the night.
But when I'm on my back, it feels better just to lay flat.
Yeah.
I do have very flat military type posture, though. I don't know if that influences it.
It could be more the neck's fault than the pillow's fault. And so when it comes down to it, you kind of dissect out which is comfortable. Just like Mike was saying a minute ago, is there something weird? Yeah. Somebody sleeps cross-legged with their head face down in the bed. We've got to stop that.
That's weird.
People
say,
well, yeah, is that a problem? Yeah, it's a problem. We're just going to say yes. I can't say for sure.
There's probably out there people listening going, I'm such a weirdo.
Oh, crap. Yeah. Stop that too. Yeah, no more fatty inflammatory sausage and no more sleeping cross-legged.
I do. My wife went out and just bought these without any prompt from me. I think she read it somewhere and ended up buying those pillows that have like the...
Oh, the big curve thing to it?
Like, yeah, they're like curved and you're like your head sits in it and it's really comfortable actually.
Like a memory foam pillow?
Yeah, it's like memory foam, but it also has like it cups your head. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's why my recommendation when it comes to sleep posture is find what's comfortable, and realize that might change as you change the function of your neck. So yeah, when people come in, their back's killing them. They say, "I think I'm gonna buy a new mattress tomorrow." I say, "Well, let's fix your back first, and then find what's comfortable."
So, there you go.
Oh, that's a great point, actually.
Yeah.
I find that I sleep. What's comfortable is different depending on how much I had to drink. So, like, so if I go to bed completely sober, I'm just on my back.
Uh-huh.
But if I've had a few, then I end up like head at the other end, you know.
Yeah.
So five nights a week, you're all over the place.
That's right.
And the other two nights of the week, you're on your back.
That's right. Yeah. Monday and Wednesday, I'm pretty good. But Tuesday, Thursday, yeah.
Yep. That's one way to find one's comfort.
Yeah. We're joking. It's like 4 days a week.
All right, you also had a question. You stole my question, so I'm gonna steal yours.
Okay,
go for it. Another misconception is that chiropractors get more sales coaching and training in chiropractic school than they do medical.
Yeah. Well, I wish I had more business and marketing background. Just
me too.
Because that's obviously important. No, I mean, I think that a lot of people's conception about chiropractic has to do with, you know, what they see in the newspaper inserts on any, you know, Sunday morning, you know, what's on the giant billboards.
Mm-hmm.
And just realize that as since chiropractors aren't completely invested and fully participating members,
mm-hmm,
of the medical healthcare establishment, that a lot of them market heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And so unfortunately most people's expectations or perception of chiropractic is colored by what they see in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you won't see our stuff up there, because I think that we do a good job of taking care of patients and getting them fixed and getting them out the door so they can go sing our praises and tell some other sick people and some people who have some movement problems about us.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's you know, all kinds of different folks out there that may be marketing heavily.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't describe all of us.
Yeah, you know, I've often heard that comment from doctors. Mm-hmm. In particular, I remember one time hearing it from an anesthesiologist.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're in severe pain, you don't have to market anesthesia. Like, if you have a big cut in your leg and they're going to do surgery on it, you don't have to market anything. They are begging you to fix them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the extent of the anesthesiologist marketing has to do with chatting up with the surgeons over coffee, you know, that morning.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you need to go to the ER, it's not like you're driving down the street and you see a big billboard that says, "Now until November 1st, half off at the ER." Like, they don't have to advertise. It's the ER. You're going to go there.
Half off anesthesia for your next knee surgery.
That's right. Like, they could double it and you'd still take it.
That's right.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what anesthesia costs. I've thought about that before. It's like, man, they could charge you anything.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've never asked the doctor how much anesthesia was. No. Ever. I'm like, sir, just please put that in my arm.
You get to scratch that out of the package.
Put that back in place. I don't want to be awake for it. Yeah.
I did find out that they charge separately, though.
Yes, yeah. The last time I went to the ER, which was like 2 months ago, I got like three different bills.
That's right. You
know? It's crazy.
Hospital, doctor, and anesthesiologist.
Yeah. That
was for my last surgery.
Yeah.
No, maybe a couple surgeries.
I also got one from the radiological lab or whatever for the x-ray.
I got you.
I thought
We got to quit getting, we got to go see this guy and quit getting hurt.
Well, mine was definitely an ER visit.
sudden onset mechanical pain.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with mechanical pain.
Uh-oh.
Punctured. Never mind. We won't talk about it on here.
My hip was out of socket. I was going. Actually, I didn't have a choice. The ambulance took me there.
The ambulance wouldn't take you anywhere else.
That's right.
I got to go see a chiropractor.
I appreciated that. All right. You want to shut it down?
Yeah.
Closing thoughts?
Let's shut it down real quick. All right, Doug, what do you, you got anything you want to promote?
I do.
Give you a chance to think about what you want to promote.
I got to promote something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peace, love, and
there you go.
Chiropractic.
Usually something that will make you money.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There you go. You did good not putting you on the spot right away. Definitely go out and watch Maximum Mobility. It is the mobility seminar that I put on. I'll provide a comprehensive system to figure out exactly where you need range of motion and which joints don't need range of motion. That way you can get the most out of the stretching exercises that you're going to do, and you can improve your movement efficiency so you can stay injury-free longer, and you can learn the more complex CrossFit movements or the higher skill CrossFit movements a little bit easier because you have the adequate or the necessary range of motion to do that. So that's in the Fitter Shop. Click on Seminars and click on Maximum Mobility, and you can read more about that product. Brad?
Awesome. Yeah, go check that out. Go prehab before you rehab, guys. And yeah, Maximum Mobility, I love it. Some excellent stuff. Yeah, I mean, if anybody has any questions or anything, just contact me. I'm sure my contact points will be up somewhere. I'm on Twitter, and we have our clinic on Facebook, and I've got a blog too. You can click on the contact me button.
Okay. What's your Twitter name and what's your blog address?
Yeah, the at Dr. Brad Cole, Dr. Brad Cole, Twitter. And the blog is drbradcole.com, drbradcole.com.
So, C-O-L-E?
C-O-L-E. That's correct. The English version.
If you can't, if you can't spell Brad, then he doesn't want to see you.
Exactly. No, just keep searching. Hey, and thanks a lot for letting me come and talk. This is,
if you're in Memphis, come see if you have any pain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you're 5 states away, fly over.
Yeah. Anywhere. It doesn't matter.
Take you from anywhere. Yeah. That's right.
I'm flying from Dubai.
I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you. I'll look at you and hook you up with somebody and help you out.
Yeah. And don't forget to go to fitter.tv. That's FITR.TV and sign up for the newsletter. That way you can be up to date on all the new stuff that we're doing. See you guys next week.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks.